There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile, hour number two on this Friday. Glad you're along. Really glad you're along this hour, and a very important discussion. And it's one that I have been stumbling through for weeks. And finally, somebody who does this and knows this joining us to discuss more about, I'm not even going to say the name of, because I've messed it up and butchered it so many different ways, but the medicine combination that has been in discussion for maybe treating symptoms, people that have coronavirus, and then this idea of using it prophylactically for people in the healthcare world. And a call the other day from Dr. Irvin came into the show in the 8 o'clock hour of Mobile Mornings, and this man had so much information. I said, well, we can't get it done now. Can you come down and sit down and talk about this in depth? And he has, and Dr. Lee Irvin, our guest in studio, and we're going to talk about that as well right here on Midday Mobile. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And it's a, and we'll put the picture up. You're in here. I want to talk about this because I've been talking about the situation we're in here at FM Talk, and you're in here and you have, that's PPE. That's the stuff we're all talking about.
Right. This is not the extreme PPE like guys in the ICU would use, or guys on the really front lines, which would include basically a full body suit and a better mask,
right,
an N95 type mask and full headgear. But this is sort of the PPE that we would use for other than those situations.
But this is what you in your business, I mean, frontline, this is what you've got. This is like the casual wear version of it, but this is what y'all are wearing every day.
And this is primarily what we would wear in the operating room when I do surgery: surgical gown, sterile gloves, mask, headgear.
And it's interesting to see it because there's so much discussion about supplies of PPE and how many, what comes from the National Reserve, and people are picturing, oh, that's gloves. But it's not just gloves. It's the mask, it's the gloves, it's the gown, it's the whole nine.
Correct. And particularly the better gear like the N95 mask. Those have been in short supply. I have one in my desk just in case.
Wow. Wow. I would talk about your time in the world of healthcare. You've been doing this for decades. I don't want to age you, Dr. Irvin, but you've been doing this a long time.
I don't mind saying I've been in Mobile for 37 years. Anesthesiology trained, and I've devoted my practice to pain management for 31 years. Wow. I started doing it before it had a stigma,
yeah,
like the last few years.
And that's, I mean, in doing that job, that's going to put you front line with people that, I mean, you got to see them for other reasons, but you don't know what they're, if they're COVID-19, you know, if they have, if they're positive for it or not.
Correct. Particularly since there are seem to be a large number of cases that may be asymptomatic and still be infectious while they're asymptomatic. They don't even know they have the virus. And we do come in contact with patients in the office. We've curtailed that pretty much in the last couple of weeks, and trying to do telephone interviews and visual when possible.
Right.
We question the patients, any of them that come into the office, take the temperature, do a little questionnaire, usually call them the night before if they're scheduled to come into the office. Started this about 3 weeks ago. I said, do you have a cough? Are you sick? Do you have a fever? If so, don't come. We'll make other arrangements.
Can you break down for us some, because we hear asymptomatic, number one, then we hear somebody's positive for the COVID-19 antibodies, and
correct,
then people who have a case of COVID-19. Can you explain the differences between those?
Yes. People can contract the virus and harbor the virus and have absolutely no symptoms at all. and they are infectious during stage.
They can still, even if somebody is not sick at all, they could be passing it on.
That's correct, and that's what a lot of people don't understand at this point. They can also have minor symptoms that may not even attribute to having the COVID-19. There are various reports, but it could start out simply as GI symptoms. Can start out with a runny nose. Somebody thinks I have a bad cold, and can progress to the pulmonary problems, which may be very similar to the usual seasonal influenza virus. So this sort of masquerades. And without the large-scale testing that we need more testing of patients that are symptomatic. We need more surveillance testing. In other words, just the general population. We need to sample the general population so that we have a better idea of the exact incidence of the COVID-19. And then as far as the antibodies are concerned, you develop antibodies as fighting the virus. Now, those can be sampled with blood, and you can detect the antibodies in the course of the disease, and you can also detect the antibodies once someone has completely recovered from the disease. They have rid themselves of the virus, but they still have the antibodies, also bringing up other questions about how long are we immune once we've had the disease. Is it weeks? Is it months? Is it a year? We really don't know at this point.
Okay, so we don't know. So the idea that the antibodies are this suit of armor, the same way we're vaccinated as children for a series of things, and then those antibodies stay. We believe that that gives us the immunity going forward. We don't know that for COVID-19.
We don't know that for COVID-19. We're still working
pretty
on
new.
That to find out. What we do know about the antibodies, though, is that if somebody is positive with the antibodies, meaning they have or have had COVID-19, and they have sufficient tests to show that they have not, they do not have an active infection. They've rid their bodies of the virus and still just have the antibodies. Then those people may be extremely important for blood donations and use of plasma, of their plasma that has the antibodies to use in patients that are very sick with the COVID-19.
So those antibodies that were developed inside one person, if they're transferred in a blood transfusion or plasma, the new human, the host, that they pick that up as their own, or they?
Those antibodies are used to attack the virus. Those antibodies are
so they're like, welcome aboard.
Right. They're in that convalescent plasma.
Okay.
And they go to work right away.
So that's fascinating. So even though it's a different host, obviously, here, those antibodies can go to work, and even though they're from someone else.
Absolutely. The antibodies to that particular virus are the same in you or me or anybody else.
With this, I know there's a lot of unknown, but let's talk about the things we do know about it, or maybe we don't know, and that's transferring. You talk about the asymptomatic people could transfer. Obviously, somebody with a full bore case of coronavirus, COVID-19, can transfer it. But how far? You know, we talk about the 6 feet of distancing. We talk about wiping down surfaces. What do we know, Dr. Irvin? What's provable?
Well, in the last 3 weeks, you've heard a lot of different things
yes.
on TV. The general consensus is that it is infective by droplet formation.
Okay.
When you cough, when you sneeze, and now we know that even just when you talk that you may be shedding the virus. That's one of the reasons for the social distancing. Also, it can be transmitted by what's called fomites. In other words, if you cough or you sneeze and those droplets fall to the ground, that we think fall to the ground or to the surface within 6 feet of the person that coughed or sneezed, you can actually pick it up from those surfaces, which is one reason that I tell my patients, when you come home, when you've been out to the grocery store and you come home, besides washing your hands, disinfecting your hands, spray the bottom of your shoes.
You're going to make my wife so happy. She's been on that for weeks here. So a physician, she wins that one, physician saying that bottom of your shoes could carry this
absolutely
into
anything you touch or the bottom of your shoes. If you've walked on a surface that has those droplets that stay alive for a period of time, we're not quite sure how long, but at least for several hours, you need to clean your shoes as well. When I come home and I've had contact with patients, I even take off my outside shirt and wash it as soon as I can, put on a new shirt. A lot of times take off the shoes that I've had on and put on some more comfortable shoes. So I'd probably go a little bit overboard.
Well, but Debbie, you're in the heat of it and you're, you know, you, well, I don't know. I mean, it seems like I would think you would have more interactions with it, but maybe not. Maybe just going, because you have a controlled environment versus me going in the grocery store.
Correct. Now, the real guys that are on the front lines, you know, the front lines where it came from wartime, probably World War II and before, we had lines that we could determine. We knew the enemy was on one side and we were on the other. Since probably Vietnam with guerrilla warfare, you didn't have those lines.
Right.
You didn't know where the enemy was. They could be behind you.
Sure.
And this is the same thing with this COVID virus. We don't know where it stops. It's not like there's a line of people with a COVID virus and you avoid them, because it could be anywhere around you or anything that you touch when you're out in public. I was glad to see the CDC reverse their course about recommendations for facial coverings or masks when people are out in public. And people need to remember that more protects you from infecting somebody else. And I see people in the grocery store walk around with a mask on, and they're constantly fiddling with their mask, putting their hands to their face, rubbing their eyes. So that mask is not really doing them that much good as far as not contracting the virus. I see the same things with gloves. People don't understand. The gloves may protect your hands directly from infection, but the gloves get contaminated, and then you can contaminate yourself with your gloves.
Mm-hmm.
So when you, my usual routine, if I have to go to the grocery store or I come in from work, is I use my little alcohol spray bottle and I spray down my gloves, and then I take them off like we would in surgery, putting the finger inside the cuff of the glove, peeling them off inside out, and then disposing of them. And some people say they can use them again if you just disinfect it, but it's better for a one-time use.
So with that, we're going to come back. I want to talk more about the surfaces, number one. You know, what surfaces? Are there surfaces that can hold this longer than others? And we'll talk about that. Also, want to talk about that spray you just mentioned you brought in here. This is y'all, the folks that like to DIY and do things at home. This is y'all going to love what Dr. Irvin brings out here in just a second. Plus, we're going to talk about medicines out there and how these can be applied for people suffering from COVID-19, and also what Dr. Irvin does every day as a preventative. It's all straight ahead right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along, and great to have Dr. Irvin in the studio. Lee Irvin, who is 37 years here, and now dealing with his regular job as a physician. But now on top of this, y'all have to do actually more than what we're doing everywhere in protecting yourself from COVID-19. It's just part of whatever practice, whatever specialty, correct?
Correct.
So I've got this like out, maybe just a science question here. You and I talked about it a little bit during the news break. Surfaces, you mentioned that. And then, of course, my mind goes racing to all the stories I've seen. Cardboard versus plastic versus metal versus the bottom of your shoes you were spraying, where does it stick the longest?
Well, we probably don't know exactly at this point. You know, this is sort of a new problem that we're addressing. I saw one alarming report regarding one of the cruise ships that had a lot of COVID-19 patients. And apparently they went back onto the cruise ship and sampled the surfaces and found that there was still COVID-19 viruses that were viable, I believe, on stainless steel, and that was some 17 days later.
Holy
now,
God.
What I don't know is, had they previously gone over those surfaces with a disinfectant, or did they just leave the ship and wait and come back? And all those things are important for us to know to really decide how careful we need to be with surfaces. I've heard that on cardboard, that it would last for up to 24 hours before it died.
It seems so contrary, right? You talk about, here's a stainless steel surface at 17 days, cardboard 24 hours. I obviously don't have your training, but just the hayseed in me goes, well, cardboard is kind of porous and it could get in there and stick? And
I would think the same thing. And the answer is we don't have enough of the studies yet to really say. What we've done is if you get a package from the grocery store mm-hmm. or from Amazon delivered to your front door, we would rather let that sit there for 24 hours before we do anything with the package. At home, we frequently will spray the package down with my handy-dandy alcohol yes. sprayer, open the package up, take everything out, spray anything down, and then use that material. When we bring groceries in, we spray down the sack or the boxes with, I guess, probably Clorox spray would do. I happen to like the alcohol sprayer
that
I have.
We're fixing to talk about this one.
Yeah, if you have vegetables, bring them in and put them in the sink, because that is a porous material, and wash them, and then set them aside
to dry.
But
you have to wash them with a soap, or do you have to
soap and water is the best.
Okay, because we're all used to kind of like rinsing off our vegetables and fruit and all that, but that's just with water. In this case, you're using some kind of solvent.
Soap and water, because in the soap and water, even just washing your hands, you know, that's quite effective if you use enough time to wash your hands, and they say, you know, at least 20 seconds. So you really can't just put the soap on and rinse it off with the water. You really need to wash your hands.
And I think we're all learning a lot about that lately, and it's probably going to be better for us long term for a whole bunch of reasons.
Health-wise. I hope this holds over long term.
Yeah, I do too. You mentioned this a couple times, and y'all are going to see this. We'll put a picture up later on, but you've got these spray bottles in here, and I love this because this is DIY. You're making your own sanitizing spray.
Correct.
Hey, I love this too. A physician makes his own. This is my kind of people. So how do you make this stuff?
Well, we know that with certain alcohols that disinfects from this virus. And we know that it has to have a certain concentration. Mm-hmm. Like with isopropyl alcohol, it needs to be 70%. So something above 70%. Ethyl alcohol is probably more effective. Again, something that we don't know about exactly with the COVID virus. So with the shortage of disinfectants, and it's a little expensive, but Everclear is...
And y'all don't act like you don't know what he's talking about.
Everclear is pure grain alcohol. It is 190 proof or 95% alcohol. So you can either use it straight or you can dilute it with water to a concentration no less than 80%, or you can dilute it with 100 proof vodka to a concentration no less than 80%.
But that's what you're using. You walked in here, we're trying to keep everything clean in here, and you sprayed with that. That's what you use.
Correct. And that's what I use on my shoes and on my clothes. And at the end of the day, if there's any left, I brought you guys some. If there's any left, you can do whatever you want to with it.
That's right. We can sanitize from the inside out. I've got a couple questions here lining up on the text line for you, Dr. Irvin. This one from Ben in Point Clear. He says, is there enough information to determine if you can get COVID-19 again if you've already had it? It's kind of what we're talking about with the antibody, right?
There is not enough information at present to tell you when you might be able to get COVID-19 again. Just like the seasonal flu virus, if you have one particular strain of virus and you fought that off, then you have a certain immunity for a period of time. It may carry over to the next year. We're not exactly sure. We don't know about the COVID-19. And this is one of the problems with the COVID-19. We have no built-up herd immunity.
Right.
With the seasonal flu virus, you have a certain number of people that are immune to one particular strain. So they don't get it and they don't pass it on.
Yeah, like roadblocks, dead ends for the virus there.
Right. With the COVID-19, we really don't have that information at present. My guess would be that for the current season, that once you've had the COVID-19 and you've fought it off, that you are immune for a period of time, probably at least for several months. Now, we really don't know from the studies yet how long that's going to be.
It's a learning process. And I want to get into some medicine questions here. I'm going to ask one quick question from the phone line. I'm just going to skip over here. Mike, I get your question asked because Mike's not the only person. Mike in Gulf Shores says, are viruses alive? That's been on the text line. People are like, yeah, this is not bacteria. It's a virus. Is a virus alive?
Quite an interesting question. They are alive, but in a different way. You know, your usual cells have a cell membrane, have a soup of cytoplasm, have a nucleus that contains DNA, which is a double-stranded helix of RNA, and then you have little factories in the cytoplasm that produce proteins, and it's told to by the nucleus. With the viruses, they're more of a particle, and to try and simplify it, they're more of a particle that is built to invade living cells, and inside that particle are strands of RNA, which once the virus penetrates the cell, transfers the RNA into the cytoplasm of the living cell, and it sort of fools that living cell into making more of the viral RNA, and that's the replication, which forms more virus particles to infect.
So that's how they reproduce.
Correct.
So it doesn't. If a virus on its own, isolated from any host, couldn't reproduce.
Correct.
All right, I would have got a minute left here for the break, and then we'll come back and talk more about this. But you called in the other day talking about, and I mess it up every time, the chloroquine Z-Pak thing.
Hydroxychloroquine, yes. And azithromycin.
Okay, see that, what he said. That combination, we've heard so much discussion about. You're taking it, you took it today.
Yes.
You take it every day.
Yes.
Talk about it.
For the past 2 weeks. We do not, and this is something that is personal because, and I think there are other physicians in town also who are taking it. The problem is that we do not know what the prophylactic dose of the hydroxychloroquine is. We know that prophylactic doses of medications are usually lesser of a dose than it takes to treat the disease. So just
on ounce of prevention.
Correct. So it's a guess as to what the actual prophylactic dose would be. And we can get into the usual dose for treating COVID-19.
Let's do that. We'll run to the news break here and come right back with the dosage. So it's your chance to get those questions answered, and we're going to do it. The man can say the name of the medicine, let alone he's taking it. And the questions so many of us have about it, we'll get those answered next.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile online at fmtalk1065.com. Remember, check us out, facebook.com/fmtalk1065, Twitter and Instagram. Having a conversation with Dr. Lee Irvin, who is in here doing social distancing, has sprayed and cleaned what's going on, his microphone, the surface in front of him. He's done it with his own concoction, though, which is really interesting because so many people have such issues finding sanitizers. I mean, that stuff I have in front of you, these things sitting between you and I, those are gold.
Those
are gold. I'm going to get you a little closer to the mic. But you making yours, once again, using, don't act like y'all don't know what it is, PGA, right?
Right.
And if you want to cut it with a little bit of vodka.
Correct.
All right. That is what a physician is spraying in here. Let's also talk about something that has gotten so much discussion here. And we're talking about hydroxychloroquine. I messed it up again.
No,
hydroxychloroquine and the Z-Pak, the azithromycin. This combination showing, you talked about it as prophylactic. And what you're taking almost is a defense, a prevention.
Correct.
Okay. Now for everybody else. Let's talk about those folks that aren't a physician. Are you saying that somebody should take it, like in your position as prophylactic, but what about for people who aren't in your position? Do they, if they decide, talk about the pros and cons of this and when somebody should take it. Is this something we take once we get sick, before we get sick? What?
First of all, I cannot advocate that the general public at this point takes hydroxychloroquine as a prophylactic.
Okay.
We don't have enough evidence yet. Hopefully by next year, we do have enough evidence. But at this point, the use of the hydroxychloroquine along with a Z-Pak has limited but very good clinical evidence for when someone has symptoms of the COVID-19. I personally think that by next year, maybe in New York or other places, that will have enough evidence to say, here's the dose and take it prophylactically for someone who is not at risk for significant side effects. But at present, I think for someone who has symptoms, primarily the pulmonary symptoms, that it would probably be a good idea if they do not have any contraindications, and we'll talk a little bit about that, that they start the Plaquenil and possibly along with the Z-Pak, although the Z-Pak does add added possible complications.
Okay, now this is a medicine that's been around a long time. This is not brand new on the market.
No, it's not brand new at all. I don't know, probably 50 years or greater that it's been used primarily for treatment in the early days of malaria and for prophylaxis of malaria. So we know that it was effective for that disease. And then with widespread use, millions of people in the areas where malaria was endemic. And now in more recent times, and particularly in this country, it's used for its anti-inflammatory effects, primarily in patients with rheumatoid arthritis or with lupus. We know the appropriate dosage for those patients, so we're sort of extrapolating that data to the appropriate dosage for the COVID-19, and that's being clarified further as regards loading doses, whether someone is overweight, whether they have diabetes, whether they are at extreme risk. So we still don't know all the answers, but this drug has been around for a long time. We know that it has a certain safety profile, and everything is a matter of risk versus expected benefit. The risk of going on a ventilator, which is bad enough, mm-hmm. or dying when you have the pulmonary complications with COVID-19, I think far outweighs the risk of taking this medication.
So, and this is the conversation you had with us the other morning that prompted so many questions. That is a risk versus reward. You're not saying that this is something, because it seems, I'll tell you my side of it from a non-physician side, just a regular guy. I see the press conference and they're, you know, needling the president or others and saying, well, it could do this, that, and the other. You're not saying that, hey, there couldn't be some issue with it, but compared to the option, that's what people need to look at, right? Weigh the risk versus reward.
Exactly. This may bother some of my friends or some of my ex-attendings, but you can't get three doctors in the same room and unanimously agree on any question. And you have your, what I call this, your stuffed shirt, bow tie wearing academic ivory tower types that can find a reason to do or not to do anything. So there is some dissent, but again, when you look at the risk profile, I think that the benefit far outweighs the risk for these medications.
So if somebody was talking to their physician about it, somebody who was considering this, that physician's going to ask those questions, I'm sure, of those exacerbating circumstances, right?
Correct. I think it was wrong for certain segments of the government to prohibit doctors from being doctors and having a physician-patient relationship. And I was glad to see a reversal to the point that would be my recommendation is that talk to your physician. Let them tell you what the possible risk of these medications are. Tell them what your risk factors are. You know, do you have heart problems? You know, are you on Coumadin? Are you on Digoxin for a failing heart? All of these things are important to determine the risk of this medication to a particular patient.
So this is a lot of questions coming in on this. Is if somebody's going to go in and get this prescribed, is the efficacy better if they get it early on? And I'm kind of combining a couple of questions. Early on with the symptoms, or does it work just as well if they're in full throes of it? Is there been any research on that?
Again, we really don't know. I think that most physicians would be more comfortable with saying, have this on hand. If you have been exposed to COVID-19, if you have a family member in your home that has COVID-19, Like you guys. You were exposed last week.
Let's talk about it. I mean, this is why you're sitting here in the studio. We had the case.
Because we do know that once symptoms begin that are related to COVID-19, that you're probably better off hopping on it. But, but again, that's not completely determined, and we're still doing the studies on that.
And you could go, so somebody should go and talk with their physician beforehand and see if they would be a candidate for that to have it on hand.
Absolutely.
All right. So another question here on COVID-19, and this may be one of those that we don't know yet, is, and we talked about a little bit with the cruise ship, is the infection rate higher with a massive load versus a small? The idea of, does it take just one virus there, or do you have to swamp it? I mean, what?
We don't know. We do know that with most bacterial-type infections, of course, this is viral, that the amount of inoculation is perhaps important.
The body, the more bacteria in that case you get at one time, the better chance you have
of having a problem.
Okay.
You know, we know that our body can fight off certain types of infections if the inoculation is small. We're not quite sure about the COVID-19.
So these are these questions that are going to be answered in our rear view. In your estimation, are we – obviously, we're in the fight right now to flatten the curve and for those issues. But does this sticker – I mean, the flu – we talk so much about the flu. The flu's not going – we've been fighting it for a long time, and the flu is still part of our life. Will COVID be part of our life going forward?
Yeah, let me talk about seasonal flu for just a moment. One of my pet peeves. There are so many people that do not get the flu vaccine. They choose not to. Not only do they put themselves at risk, but they also put everybody else at risk for getting the disease and passing it on. The seasonal flu vaccines have proved to be very safe in almost everybody. There are certain exceptions, and there are certain exceptions with previous flu vaccines. Now, this is an important point also. We have used hydroxychloroquine for a long period of time, so we know the risk profile. We've used Z-Pax for a long period of time. We know the risk profile. There may be some other treatments that are going to come along that may be better and may be proven. Monoclonal antibodies, I think, hold a lot of promise. The plasma infusions that we talked about for convalescent patients. Vaccines, however, do need to go through more rigorous trials that we have not done yet. So this is the one that we know the most about that has, at present, the best clinical evidence for use.
Well, we've got a lot of information to digest on this, and I sure appreciate your time here. And this is going to be something I'm probably going to be ringing your phone here going forward, because by next week there'll be a whole new series of questions I have for you.
Happy to have you call at any time. I want to say a couple of things before we get off. I want to thank you and your staff for the service you do to the community. I've been listening to you for a long time. You know, provide great news and great discussions and debate for important topics for the community, political topics, and medical topics when necessary. Also,
thank you.
I would like to commend the real frontline medical personnel. The ER docs and nurses, the emergency care docs and nurses, the pulmonologists, the infectious disease doctors, the guys that are managing the ventilators right now in the ICUs, they know that they every day that they go to work that they're putting themselves in danger. Most of us medical people are used to that. In this situation, I don't think that we can give enough praise to them. And also, the firefighters, the police officers, the sheriff's deputies, the EMTs, they know that they're at risk, and they go about doing their jobs selfishly for the benefit of our community. So I would like to thank them. My condolences go out to you guys for the loss of Mr. Brabner.
Thank you.
Also, I was notified yesterday of the loss of a 20-plus year friend and patient who had heart problems, underwent a left ventricular assist device surgery at Ochsner's, was recovering quite well, contracted COVID-19, and died. So my condolences to both of those families.
Thank you so much. Thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for bringing the information to us here. And thank you, for on the side note, for the tip for the homemade DIY sanitizer. I like that. I like that a lot. Coming right back. We will wrap it up here on Midday Mobile. This podcast will be available next hour or so. You can grab that, of course, from fmtalk1065.com and share this. Let's let this go viral, the information you heard here this hour. All right, coming right back.